This is a KUNV Studios original program.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Hi, I'm Charles Stanton. I'm on the faculty of the Honors College of UNLV and the Boyd School of Law.
Hi, I'm Gabriella Tam. I'm a fourth-year accounting student.
And welcome to
Social Justice.
Social Justice, a conversation.
A conversation.
Good evening, everybody. Back to our regular program with my partner, Gabriella Tam.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about a few things today regarding social justice. And I think we forget sometimes that social justice is not only a concern in our country, but it should be a concern about what's going on in other countries as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to start the program, and Gabriella, who has spent extensive time in Hong Kong, can sort of fill in a lot of the blanks. There's a new law in Hong Kong called the Anti-Dissent Law. And basically it is that you must, you know, obey whatever the party line is from the Chinese Communist Party. And if you don't, very bad things could happen to you. As well as not only being able to have proper legal representation after you're incarcerated. And my thought on it is, obviously, as somebody who's not of Chinese descent, but someone who visited Hong Kong a number of times, I see it as like this profound tragedy, though.
It is really sad. Like, whenever my mom will be like, oh, like, I miss Hong Kong. And, like, I'll be like, I miss Hong Kong. We always talk about how it's just not the same anymore now. And it's really, really sad because I do miss it a lot. I have family there. So it's just hard being separated from them.
Yeah. Well, I remember, you know, coming in on the boat and you see all these, you know, these huge buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so scenic and so panoramic when you mm-hmm. go there. And there was such a vitality in the place, though. That was the thing about
mm-hmm.
it. It was always considered one of the cities that you had to visit, you know.
It's beautiful.
And when you go around the world. And of course, you know, the hotels and everything. It was the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had made, I guess it was The Man with the Golden Gun, the James Bond movie there, and they had made a lot of other movies there too.
Yeah.
And there was a big film industry in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's interesting to me though is when you talk about, you know, these dictatorships and everything like that. The thing that all of them have in common is they're terrified of having their people have free will.
Yeah.
In other words, like, everything has to be programmed. They have to dictate what the people should believe, what the people should think. But if your government, if your philosophy is so sound and so good for people, then why should you have to use extreme measures?
Yeah, exactly. Wait, yeah.
People should want to flock to it.
Mm-hmm.
Except, of course, when you know that it's not. You know that it's a system of tyranny, basically. Basically benefiting a few people at the top of the food chain and the rest of the people, you know, basically having very little, you know. I think you can see that through China.
Mm-hmm.
and Russia, of course, as well.
Yeah.
You know, Russia in the sense that, like, you know, you see Moscow and you see the Kremlin, you see all this impressive you know, architecture and museums and everything. But when you get out of the city, when you travel outside,
yeah, it's like a facade, kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, it's a facade.
It's like a little like mask. It's to distract you from the fact that, like, hey, there's like one person ruling this whole entire
yeah.
country, and
yeah.
they want it to be in a certain way
yeah.
and have certain things done.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
you don't follow that, you're done.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting too, of course, is that Russia's economy was in pretty good shape before they got involved in the war in the Ukraine.
Mm.
And there have been literally thousands and thousands of Russian soldiers who have been killed in this war
mm-hmm.
that were basically conscripted into the military. And the lot of those people is like terrible. I mean, when they had the election a number of days ago in Russia, there was really no opposition. But the people who supported Navalny all showed up at the polling places,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't vote. They were just standing around there, like showing that, you know, we know this is basically bogus.
Oh,
that it's not a legitimate. It's not a legitimate election.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the United States, of course, is one of the last bastions of democracy that's
yeah.
against that. And the other tragedy, of course, now is getting this aid plan for the Ukraine, where we've been backing them up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And now because the ex-president told the Speaker of the House,
he's like, no more.
No more.
No more.
But what's crazy about it, too, is, though, and I've said this before, and, you know, this gets into the talk about the filibuster and the Senate and everything. Mm-hmm. We are supposed to be a democracy.
Yeah.
Okay? So you can vote for the things I believe in, or you can vote against the things I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
You can vote for the aid, or you can vote against the aid. But what we should not have in the Congress is a filibuster of any kind, or a refusal to put the votes on the table.
Yeah.
Everybody should be counted as to what they believe in or don't believe in, and you make a vote. And if the majority of the Congress doesn't want the aid for the Ukraine, then there's not going to be any aid. But the majority of the Congress does want aid for the Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
and they use these procedural things to not allow the stuff to be brought to the floor of the House, just as Mitch McConnell was doing with the Senate. Basically, so you needed 60 votes
mm-hmm.
to get the thing to the floor. Now you have 100 senators. The thing is put on the table, and everybody decides. Why would you need 60 votes to make it legitimate to have a vote? You vote. That's democracy.
Yeah,
that's democracy. But, you know, with all these rules and everything are really anti-democratic. They don't want democracy. See, a lot of it is that people believe, well, you know, the Congress and all the stuff, they're representing us and everything like that. They're not representing you a lot of the time.
No,
They're representing the people that put you in that office.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the voters either. I'm talking about the lobbyists.
The money.
The donor people and all the rest of that stuff.
Yeah.
And the people who supposedly represent us are doing the bidding of these people.
Mm-hmm.
That's as simple as that, you know?
I've always said, like, I mean, of course I want them to care about us, but they don't care about us.
Yeah.
Honestly, all they really care about is, like we always say, like, money and power.
Yeah.
It's all this, like, greed.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting, you know, In the Verdict movie with Paul Newman,
mm-hmm.
where you know he makes that summation to the jury at the end of the movie, and he talks about how people have lost faith in their institutions. Well, it's not so much the institution itself as, you know, the idea behind it was a good idea to have a Senate, to have a House of Representatives, to have a Supreme Court, you know, etc.
Uh-huh.
But it's the failure of the people, though. It's the failure of the people that are elected.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't see like a duty, though.
Yeah.
Like when you would go there to represent, let's say, Las Vegas or Clark County or the state of Nevada, and they don't seem to have any idea about that. It's very similar in a sense to the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
in a sense like that. You. This is the highest court in the land. They're supposed to be like
unbiased,
even more than unbiased. Though I mean, you know, look, everybody's biased. We all have our, you know,
our preferences.
Preferences, either conservative or liberal.
Uh-huh.
But don't invent laws, though. I mean, the law is the law.
Mm-hmm.
Apply the law fairly, and act ethically. I mean, to think like, you know. You know, you have all the courts in the United States. I worked in the court system for many years. And there's a code of ethics.
Yeah.
Except in the case of the Supreme Court, they have a code of ethics too, but it's an optional one. And by that I mean to say that there's a code of ethics, but you have to self-report the thing. Mm-hmm. So basically, nothing's going to happen because nobody's going to self-report themselves. And you see it like you see it in not only cases like where you have a monetary interest in it. Like you're sitting as a judge in a case.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is like basic stuff. And you own, let's say you own a lot of stock in, say, General Motors or something. And there's a case that comes before you regarding whether General Motors used proper safety precautions or whatever it is. Well, you should know that you don't hear a case like that. You should recuse yourself from hearing it
mm-hmm.
because you have a financial interest in it.
That's exactly like accounting, like code of ethics. Like mm-hmm. we are literally like not, so, especially like in audit, like you are not supposed to be auditing like any businesses that you or like family members or like anyone close to you has like financial interest in, because you could like easily just tweak a few little things and change a little things like here and there to say like, oh no, their books are clean when they could be like extremely messy.
Yeah. But you see, the thing is that you should know that though.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing, you know, and I talk about this in the law school a lot. You know, I was talking about it last night, actually, but, that you're going to take an ethics, you're going to take an ethics exam
when
you take the bar. But the point is not taking an exam. See, anybody can take an exam. Mm-hmm. I could take an exam. You could take an exam. It's what resides in yourself, though.
Yeah.
That you know that transcends an exam.
Would you say it's like a test of your heart and your soul?
Pretty much. I would say pretty much that's well put. I mean, I remember when I took the bar, it was a 3-day exam.
Mm-hmm.
It was the multi-state exam, which was basically the law of the United States.
Ooh.
And it was like multiple choice. You know, it was what the law of the United States pretty much was in all the states
mm-hmm.
regarding different subjects.
Mm.
And then you had the essay part, which was your own state's part. So it was unique essay questions just given to your, you know, like
interesting.
What was uh-huh. going on. But the third part was the ethics part and what you would do in a situation. But that has to be part of you, though.
Yeah.
You see, a lot of these things, like, we take for granted, particularly in the law. I don't know, you would know far more than I do about the nature of regulatory procedures in the accounting field.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that, it's not a joke or anything. I mean, these are serious
It's serious
matters,
things, yeah. You know,
and how people treat it, like, they don't seem to care,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that's a lot of what's going on in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always saying this. Sometimes it may seem repetitious, but it is that there's an indifference there. I mean, you take the case of, when I hate to, you know, go over this again with Clarence Thomas, but he's hearing the case, or he's going to hear the case about, you know, the question of immunity for the president.
Mm-hmm.
But his wife was heavily involved.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to bring that up, too.
You know, I mean, how do you sit on a case like that, though?
Uh-huh.
And what I don't understand also is, where is the Chief Justice on this? He should really be saying, listen, you know,
you need to get out.
You should not be hearing this case.
Mm-hmm. Who's the Chief Justice?
Well, John Roberts.
Oh, yeah.
John Roberts. But the thing is, like, everybody's to themselves. Yes, you vote individually. That's mm-hmm. true. But the Supreme Court as an entity, as a body, should have a unified approach to these questions. It's not like, well, you know, I feel like recusing, or I don't feel like, it's got to be more than that.
It's not like about yourself. It's about like the group, would you say?
Yeah, I would say it's about mm-hmm. the group. It should be.
But is it?
but it, and you know, and it's also like, you know, like, in the judiciary system, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, the lawyers have a responsibility to, you know, try to administer the law and, you know, do all the things that are required of. But you see this case down in Florida with the documents case, and clearly something is wrong there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and if you just study the transcript of what's been going on, and the person who's running the case, and you say to yourself, what actually is going on there? All these delays have been granted. The law, you see, what's interesting about, you know, they're bringing this thing before the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
and whether there's immunity or not. And I've spoken about this before, that, you know, the law seems very, very clear.
Yeah.
I don't even know why they took the case, but let's not even get into that today.
They're really taking their time to think.
They're taking their time to think. But the other thing about it, of course, is particularly, you know, the obstruction of justice case is a case that will either be proven or not be proven on the basis of witnesses that were there that day,
mm-hmm.
people who were in the White House. I understand that now Mark Meadows, who was the chief of staff, has been granted immunity by the mm-hmm. special prosecutor. So I'm sure his testimony will figure into it. And then the jury of his peers will decide whether he did what he did or he didn't do it, which is the American way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it is. But in the case of the documents case, the mere possession of these documents is a crime.
Yeah.
So how would you be walking around and campaigning all over the place?
No, literally. And there's other people who have gotten in trouble for having like special documents.
No.
And what makes you so different to avoid that same like punishment?
All I'm going to say is this. I don't, you know, the jury will decide on his guilt or innocence. It's not for me to decide.
Mm-hmm.
It's for those people who were called before the juror, become jurors, and they'll evaluate the evidence, and I'll trust on that. Let's say that all the cases find him innocent.
Mm-hmm.
All the juries find him innocent. Then they find him innocent, and that's the system of justice, and that's what it is. But the system, for the system of justice to work, involves actually having a jury to decide these questions. Now, if you're going to use the system and basically game the system so there's never a trial,
mm-hmm.
because there's delay after delay after delay after delay, that to me is not justice. And I say that because to me, just looking at it from my perspective, if you are in the position of being a candidate,
mm-hmm.
and you want to run for office, it would seem to me that you would want to have your name exonerated so that the people who would vote, who might not have wanted to vote for you because they see a cloud over your head that mm-hmm. you might have done something wrong, you would want to have that case heard as expeditiously as possible.
Yeah.
You would want to have that case heard as expeditiously as a poor person of color or a minority person
mm-hmm.
who wouldn't be able to make bail, and yet they languish for years in prison because they couldn't make the bail, and it takes years for the cases to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
Because supposedly part of the promise of our justice system is that justice is a speedy process.
Yeah, fast and speedy trial.
Except in this particular unique case where it seems that everything is being done to see that it's not speedy. And then the other aspect of it is, of course, in the documents case, almost every single person that was involved in this, not related to this particular case,
mm-hmm.
but had these documents, went to prison. Now, there's a movie, I've recommended it before, and I'll recommend it again. It's called Reality. And it's about this woman whose name was Reality Winner. She was working for the government, and she was a government, she was in the service of the government. It was one document, and she's doing years. Now, how could that be? How could one person be doing years in prison, and another person has stuff all over their house?
Mm-hmm.
That's why people don't believe in the institution of justice, because they just see it as this total disparity. And then, you know, it's another interesting thing now, and we talk about lack of faith in our institutions. The question of, you know, immigration has come up again.
Yep.
With this court decision now that basically the state of Texas is allowed to arrest the illegal aliens or migrants or however you want to put it. But really, if we think about it, who is responsible for the security of the United States of America? Well, it's the federal government.
Yeah.
The federal government should be doing this. It shouldn't be left to each individual state to have to be going around and
trying to guess if someone is illegal.
Exactly. And the other thing, as we mentioned before on the program, is that this immigration problem or crisis, first of all, they could have passed the bill to remediate some of it, maybe not all of it, but it was a compromise bill where they got both Democrats and Republicans. Another case of a bill not being allowed to be voted on. Okay, so there you go. So you can blame the president, but the president wasn't the one who blocked the bill from being voted on.
I think I'm like, why would you blame the president? It's not him who, I mean, all he could do is like speak about it. It's not like him being like, nah, X mark. Oh, yeah, let's let it through. Like, you know.
Yeah.
It's not.
And then the other point of it too is, you know, obviously from a humane point of view, you know, these people come from, you know, bad situations in Mexico and other places. Okay. But of course, you know, we can't take everybody in here. That's the other extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But the people don't just come here. The people don't just come here because they come from destitute situations, although many of them do.
Mm-hmm.
They come here because they know that they'll be able to get employment.
Yeah.
Now, how do they know that they'll be able to get employment? Because they know through the grapevine that there's a whole bunch of companies in this country who hire illegal people. So if we're really sincere about wanting to stop immigration, then what we have to do is deal with the companies who hire the people and say, listen, this is against the law. You're going to go to jail. And believe me, the number of people wanting to come in here, if a policy like that was enacted, would drop, because people would know basically, well, all those jobs that we thought we were going to get, those jobs have dried up.
Mm-hmm.
And the other issue there, of course, is using underage migrant labor.
Yeah.
That somehow these young people wind up all over the country working in these factories somehow. Their parents aren't there. How is that? How do we justify that? You know?
It's hard because it's like we have all these people who are basically, you know, they're kind of doing jobs that Americans kind of don't want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now it's a really tricky situation because it's like, I understand that, you know, these illegals are taking jobs from us, but they're taking the jobs that we don't want to do.
Yeah. Well, they're taking the jobs that we would want to do. And also, they're taking jobs in industry. They're taking jobs in industry where the people who run these industries know that they can get cheap labor.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the point of hiring people who are citizens of the United States, and you have to pay them so much for wages or union things or whatever it is, when I can pay somebody $6-7? So that's corrupt right there, and that's a fault to the government. But see, the problem today, unfortunately, is though whether it's the FDA or all these agencies, they don't have the enforcement mechanisms and protocols. And primarily the people, the bodies, needed to enforce this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could say, well, you know, they violated health and safety or they violated different protocols. But it's just like the meat industry. You have so few inspectors for all these plants. How actually do you do that? You see, that's the practical point of it. You know, and you know, one of the other things, of course, is that when we talk about, you know, the fact that people have lost faith in the government.
Mm-hmm.
You see all these states passing all these anti-diversity laws now.
Mm.
And Alabama's passed a new law. And this is, here we go again.
It's, Alabama.
It's against diversity. Okay. It's against diversity. Yeah, so I'll go through like the little grocery list, and you can you can throw in some of the foods while we're on. They're against diversity. Okay. Just let's analyze this.
Yeah.
I'm living in a silo. I haven't come out of the ground for 40 years. I'm against diversity, but our society is diverse.
Yeah.
Our university
is
diverse.
There's no way around it.
What are we going to do? How are we going to change that when all these people are here and they're living here and they're American citizens? Okay. So that's one thing. Then we're against equity. So if we look in the dictionary, what is the meaning of equity in the dictionary? The meaning of equity in the dictionary is to be fair. So we don't want people who are not like us, and we don't want to treat people fairly. Okay, all right, let's move along then. Then there's the matter of inclusion. Well, as far as I know, no problem has really been solved without inclusion, because inclusion in the melting pot of America is hopefully the melding together of all the talents and industries and labors and intelligence of all the people who've come here from all these foreign lands, who've come to our country, and through their knowledge and through their skills and through their entrepreneurship, we created the experiment of democracy that has never been rivaled in any other place. But we want to do it. We want to get rid of that too. But as the icing on the cake, after getting rid of all those things that we obviously can't get rid of, what we want to do now is we want to stop teaching history, basically. This is like the icing on the cake. We want to stop teaching history. And what we want to do is we want to stop teaching anything that could be perceived as divisive. In other words, we can't teach about slavery. We can't teach about people being denied the right to vote. We can't teach about how the AIDS crisis exploded because the government did nothing for years, because they believed that the people who got sick from AIDS were committing sin and God was punishing them.
We've got to
stop doing all those things. We've got to stop doing all those things and create a world that never existed. So the slaves were here for opportunity. The slaves managed to learn a trade. All of these things, the women's movement, LGBT, transgender rights, the racism, the bigotry, the homophobia, the denialism of it's all tied together.
Mm-hmm.
It's all tied together. And it has to do with basically the disregard, the disrespect, and the dehumanization of people who are not like they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what we're dealing with here. A person who does that, they should be gone.
Yeah.
Should be expelled right out of the legislature. But because it's become so normal in these places, it's accepted, you know.
That's incredibly sad.
It is sad.
Like we've always said, these people who are in our government, they are supposed to represent us. And when I mean us, I mean all of
us. That's right. Well, on that sobering note, we will end tonight's program. But I hope we've given you all something to think about. And it's only if we all, and I mean all of us,
mm-hmm.
work together, can we, all of us, make things better. Good night.
Good night. Thank you for listening to our show. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to contact us at TAMG1, that is TAMG1, at unlv.nevada.edu, or to contact Professor Charles Stanton at charles.stanton@unlv.edu.
See you next time.